Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
For over 10 years, VOC Nation has taken listeners behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Our hosts are not only experts on the business, but have lived in the business. Subscribe and hear weekly podcasts from hosts like legendary pro wrestling journalist Bill Apter, former Impact Wrestling star Wes Briscoe, former WWE and AWA broadcaster Ken Resnick, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, former WCW star The Maestro, NWA legend The Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez, and much more. VOC Nation programming is free on most major podcasting apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com. And video podcasts and bonus content is available on Patreon for as low as $3 a month. What are you waiting for? Head to VOCNation.com and dig into the most comprehensive podcast network built for pro wrestling fans. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOC Nation Wrestling Network and follow us on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Podcast, proud to be part of the VOC Nation Radio Network. Stadium Journey is more than just a wicked awesome podcast. Our website, stadiumjourney.com, contains over 2,500 stadium reviews, news items, and great features perfect for the traveling sports fan. In addition to the website, we are all over social media. You got it all covered, guys. We're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. Like us, follow us, everywhere, across the board. Tell your friends. And the Stadium Journey podcast is the perfect companion for when you're on a road trip. Just type VOC Nation Radio Network into your podcast search app or check us out on Spotify. Check out all of VOC Nation podcasts on Spotify. And in addition, all of the old Stadium Journey video podcasts are on the Stadium Journey YouTube channel. Perfect for binge watching if the weather's less than perfect. And we also stream live on twitch.tv/danlaw83. For those of you who are with us right now, thanks for watching. And don't be afraid to participate in the show. We like our stuff to interact. Now, let me just take a second and introduce my starting lineup for today. Dave Cotney is with us. You can follow him at ProFan9. Mark Vitez is here. You can follow him on the social medias at Ballpark Hunter. Our producer, the above-average comedian Dan Calachico, is online at DanLaw83. And I'm Paul Baker. You can follow me at PuckmanRI. And so if any of you have listened or watched the podcast before, you know that deep down inside, I think most of us are hockey guys. But there is a topic that has kind of avoided the podcast in our four seasons, and that is college hockey. So tonight, that's what we're going to talk about. What's the elbow? Are you doing a Gordy?
No, I was showing somebody else I'm doing a project for my injury wrap.
So
this is the only way I can sit here and do the shows and stream without my arm throbbing the entire time. Don't get old, folks. It sucks.
So speaking of those of us who are old, back when we were youngins watching some hockey, it was really, really rare to see any college hockey players play in the pros.
Yeah.
Not so the case today. College hockey has really grown in leaps and bounds over the years. Why is that? Why has the focus gone totally away from Canada and from the junior leagues, and now where college hockey is really on a par, on an even playing field.
That's a really good question. I don't really answer that question because I know, like, all of a sudden, at one point in the mid-2000s, I was able to watch college hockey, to where all those years before, I wasn't able. It was what you read in the papers. Yeah, papers, kids. It was what you read in the papers under the internets about prospects or a name. Like, you know, we all know about, for the Flyers, we all know about Cam York now. And about 20 years ago, it'd be like, whatever the papers reported on who was doing what. You didn't see a lot of it. And I think it was ramped up a little in the area of Philadelphia because you had Penn State just north. But by the time, you know, I left the area, college hockey was all over almost every game on TV now. But I can't pinpoint that. All I know is, for me, from a personal perspective, I always read up what I could because it wasn't covered a lot, Dave. I'm sure you're surprised. The Canadian juniors were not covered a lot in our area unless somebody was scouted or looked at by the specific team. But I'm so happy that's changed. And, of course, you fast forward to the internet, you buy a package and watch anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
90% of them. I know there's a lot that I envy. I'm going to say this right now. I know people are like, you're Canadian, Dan, just moved to Canada. And I'm like, okay, I can get Timbits and hockey. I'm fine with that. And Darren said Timbits are not good, and I'm going to fight him. But
birthday cake flavored Timbits are amazing.
That's the one.
Birthday cake Timbits. I'm going to take notes on that. Yeah.
Yep, that's the one.
Taking notes on that.
Bourbon flavored Timbits would be actually pretty good too.
I envy. It's changed the last couple of years because you got AHL TV, ECHL TV. You got there's Hockey TV. There's an independent company that airs the American Juniors, the equivalent to the American Juniors. Is it the NAHL?
It is the NAHL, yes. USHL.
They air those games, and I'll catch one every now and then. At a weekend, I'll spend $7 and watch a weekend. It used to be the Aston Rebels. They left. I don't know where the hell they are. Jamestown, I think, now. But I envy being able to watch the Calgary Hitmen. Calgary Hitmen, excuse me. Yes, I mentioned them on purpose. Why would I do that? Have no
idea. Why would you?
But I want the juniors to get – there's no market for it in the States, but I would love somebody to try. And I know the NHL Network feeds us one every now and then, but college hockey will do. I'm not taking that for granted. The games are on. ESPN is becoming the hockey network all of a sudden. It's weird how that works out.
Better than the USA Network.
Yes, slightly. But I'm so happy to be – I'm 37. I can watch hockey almost any night of the week right now. And that happiness is kind of multiplied by the, I don't know, the thing that's been happening the last year, something weird with a bat or something.
Well, I mean, I can remember the 1980s when you were watching the Stanley Cup Finals. That was on the USA Network. The 1994 Stanley Cup Finals was on MSG where I was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, National Hockey League itself is on major network TV. And I think they went through almost 20 years. I think the first Stanley Cup to be on major network TV in a long time was the 1995 Cup. So because of the National Hockey League profile, all of a sudden I think other leagues up from above pushed it up the ranks as well. Plus, we have more cable providers that are looking for content. Why not put some college hockey? I mean, the atmosphere at some of these venues is amazing. It would make a non-hockey fan fall in love with the sport from a live perspective. Why not put it on TV?
Okay.
So, Paul, I'm going to do something really wild and crazy here, and I'm going to answer the question that you asked.
Thank you. I appreciate that because I was thinking I was going to have to answer it myself. I do have an answer for my question.
I mean, I said I don't know. To be fair, I answered your question.
So I think there's a couple things at play. So way back, 60s, whatnot, you know, the original six era. In the original six era, NHL teams were signing guys to what they called their P card or their C card. they were signing guys at 16, at 15, at 14, right?
That's right. Bobby Orr was signed when he was like 14.
Yeah. And they controlled junior teams. So famously, the Maple Leafs had, amongst many others, but they had two main junior teams. They had the Toronto Marlboros. They had the Toronto St. Mike's Majors. And funny enough, the reason why they had two separate teams is because Conn Smythe did not like the Protestants and the Catholics fraternizing. So the Protestant players played for the Marlies. And the Catholic players played for St. Mike. So they couldn't fraternize until they got to the... Yeah. Well, once they brought the draft, then obviously that all stopped. But I think really the big push for college hockey was the Miracle on Ice. And
that was my
Brooks. And a lot of those guys were college guys, right?
True. All of them were college guys.
There's that scene in Miracle, you know, where they're skating back and forth. What team do you play? I play for Minnesota. Skate again. And, you know, they name off all these colleges that they were. But then I think what had to go with it. So the Miracle was one thing, but then they needed like a Neil Broughton, who I think if I'm reading this correct, he was the first Hobie Baker Award winner. At the time, he was probably the most prolific American player until, you know, some of the more modern players came out of Minnesota. And if you look at some of those early Hobie Baker names, there's some decent NHL players in that group, right? And you combine that with it's a less regional path to the pros. Okay, so if you're in the northwestern United States, then you're probably going to go to junior, right? So, like Washington State, believe it or not, is a hockey hotbed. There's tons of junior teams in Washington State. There's Everett, and there's Tri-City, and there's Seattle, and there's Spokane, right? If you're in the Northeast, your path is college.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's become a bit regionalized, but the college game is a different game. I think of a guy like Paul Kariya, and Paul Kariya is a Western kid. In the 90s, when the Western Hockey League was viewed as this big bruiser, farm boy fighting league, and Paul Kariya is a little guy, you know, would he have made it in the Western League? It's hard to say, right? It was definitely not a league that was made for him.
He may have got a concussion or two.
Probably. So what did he do? He went and played at the University of Maine, won a Hobie Baker, you know, was a fairly high draft pick, you know, spent some time on, like, the World Juniors, built his profile, you know, picked by the Ducks. And suddenly it's a different path. So if you're a parent, junior is a bit of a crapshoot, right? You're sending your kid away at 16, right? Like, or 15 maybe, depending on who they are. That's where you get, like, the Lindros situation, where Eric Lindros was from London. He was drafted by the Sioux, wanted nothing to do with the Sioux. His parents, you know, kicked up a fuss. Well, we don't want him going to the Sioux. So one of two things is going to happen. He's either going to get traded, or he's going to, you know, play, you know, minor midget or major midget or whatever, hold on to his eligibility, go and play college in the States. And, of course, there is that education factor. You know, there's how many teams are there, D1 teams, Paul?
59 or 61. 59. Okay. There will be 61, yeah.
And, you know, how many of those guys are making the pros? 10%?
If maybe? That, yeah.
Right? So why is everybody else there? Well, I'm sure they're there to play hockey, but they're going to get that education as well.
Yeah, your answer is very similar to mine, Dave. I was going to say the same thing. It started with the Miracle on Ice. And like you said, excuse me, more than that, then there had to be some guys who made the jump and were successful. Because guys made the NHL before the Miracle on Ice, through the 70s is really, guys started trickling in. But they were journeymen. There weren't really a whole lot of guys you could say were all-stars or, you know, guys who made their bones. But guys started having success, and you started seeing more and more. And now what's the percentage of the NHL that have college experience? Is it somewhere between a quarter and a third, I think?
It's definitely a lot higher than it was in the 80s.
Yeah. So you kind of outlined the answer to this question a little bit, but I'll ask the group, what makes college hockey a better hockey option for us puck fanatics than, say, the Canadian juniors or the minor leagues?
Oh, it doesn't. I don't think it does. I don't look at it as a better option. I look at it as another option and more to watch. I would, if somebody gave me a choice to watch it, I don't know, just be straight up, if somebody gave me a choice to watch the Canadian juniors and the NCAA, I'd pick the juniors without a hesitation. Minor two, no, in my opinion, it's just more hockey to watch, not different or an alternative. I would watch it all if I could, you know what I mean?
So I would say that the big difference is proximity. Both college hockey and Canadian junior hockey, I mean, they're fine on television, but it's not even close. It's not remotely close. Seeing college hockey live is infinitely better than on television.
Oh, God, yeah.
Seeing junior hockey live is much better than on television. Now, I would say that, especially in the OHL, the OHL is becoming more homogeneous with their arenas. They're starting to look a little cookie cutter. They're starting to look very similar. You have like Kitchener that is a very unique spot. You have Sudbury that's very unique, and it's an older building. But then you've got a bunch of them that really look a lot alike. You have Guelph that looks like Oshawa, that looks like Kingston, that looks like Niagara. Not a lot of unique spots. A man in college hockey, I'm not sure I've been to two spots that are remotely close to being the same. There is such variety in that college hockey experience.
Yeah, because the ones that I've been to, and I have not been to a lot, but all of them are unique. They have a great atmosphere, the fan base, the band, the music. The student section, the traditions, it's unlike anything I've seen even in the pros. It's simply amazing. I wish I can get out to more. That's how great it's been for me. So, yeah, no two ones have looked alike to me, and I'm sure you could find them if I ventured out to a few more, but the five or six that I have visited, take away something a little bit different.
I'm sure my opinion would change if I went to these games, but as far as TV experience, I want it all. I'll inject it all into my veins, please.
So what makes going to a college hockey game so special compared to, say, watching it on TV or comparing it to the minor pros or what have you?
I would say like when I went to Bowling Green hockey a few years ago, you have this small little hockey arena in this small town, but the place was packed and low ceilings. You know, you just had this horseshoe shaped seating stand. You had the student section there with the newspaper. They turn around during the away announcements. You had the band being played. You had people focused on the game. You know, they're there all the action's on the game. They're not there for promotion or Disney night or Nickelodeon night. It's pure passion for their school, whether you're an alumni, a student, or just a fan from the area. And it's great hockey. I mean, there's a beautiful pedigree of NHL players who left their mark at Bowling Green State. And that's just a small little college that you know, is right off the interstate just south of Toledo, and you wouldn't expect that. But here you are. You got this great environment there. And that, for me, who's kind of late in the game of going to college hockey, makes me want to go to more. I want to go to Michigan. I want to go to Michigan State. I want to check out some games in Minnesota if I can. I'm there.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, the two things that jump right out off the top are the band and the student section.
Take my answer again, Dave.
Hey, man.
Great minds. Great minds.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say this. So I've run the gambit at Michigan. I've been to football, been to basketball, I've been to hockey. My favorite student section is at hockey.
Yep, I would agree.
Western Michigan, you know, student section in football. Yeah, I'm sure there's more people. Hockey, the Lawson Lunatics, they're off the charts. It seems like, of course, that section is smaller, but there's more going on. They're a little rougher around the edge.
Oh, absolutely.
if you're a goaltender, you know, listening to the student section after you let one in is not going to be pretty. I would say that maybe the exception to that was when I was at the Big Chill, which was the precursor to the Winter Classic at Michigan, where there were 113,000 fans for Michigan State in the Big House. And that poor goalie for Michigan State, who let in 5 goals and had somewhere in the neighborhood of 80,000 people calling him a sieve, might have been a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you there. The student sections in hockey are the most entertaining. The loudest, I guess, per square inch or whatever, however you want to say it, the most vulgar, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of some of the legendary student sections in the area I've been to. Think of the Maniacs up at the University of Maine back when they were rolling and they were national contenders, in Alphon Arena, hanging over the goalie and just letting him have it. You think of you know, the BU student section, which is as vulgar as you get and antagonistic as you get. I think of the Dog Pound in Northeastern. If you've been to Northeastern, if you've been to Matthews Arena, that top section, again, hanging right over the goalie, looking almost straight down at him or her, if you're at a women's game. They just add so much to the game that you don't get in other sports. I mean, basketball has some great student sections. Football has some great student sections. There's something a little extra about a hockey student section.
He sold it banned. I'm in. You know, nothing better than that.
It's almost as if that glass is like, it's like invincibility for the fans, right? Like, Mark and I ended up at the same Miami game, Miami of Ohio, and I remember I was like right up against the glass, and Mark was in the row behind me, and I remember like it was yesterday. One of the ushers came down to talk to a couple that were just off to the side of me because they were banging on the glass and they're banging on the glass. They're banging. And it wasn't that, no, I'm sorry, you can't bang on the glass. It was, dude, the ring, you got to take the ring off to bang on the glass, okay? Because you can't be like banging the ring against the glass.
Bang all you want. Don't scratch it.
Don't scratch the glass.
So, you know what, let's just transition into let's talk about some of our favorite places, because, Mark, you brought that up, that no two places are alike, and that is absolutely true across the college hockey landscape. So between the panel here, I think we said that we've been to, out of the 59 current Division I schools, we've been to 37.
I think that's right.
I know I've been to 26 myself. Dave, you've been to about what?
15.
And Mark, you got 4 or 5 in there? Mark's got also followed with the mute button.
Yeah. Mark has the same. I don't think Mark has any original ones. He's
and so if you, yeah, just
if anybody from New Jersey that should be using the mute button, it's me. The wrong guy is using the mute button.
So let's talk about some of our favorites. Mark's been to 5. And I think we've got some overlap, so you know, 15 and 26 and 5 is.
Can you hear me now?
Mike? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
I would say, you know, it's what's interesting is you get like the full kind of gambit. So you've got a place like Mark said, like Bowling Green, which is just this little kind of bunker, and a couple others that almost seem like high schoolish. Like I've been to Ferris State, Niagara. Really, I mean, you think that Bowling Green is small? I mean, Ferris State is even smaller than that. But then on the other side, you've got like Wisconsin, which is about as close to an NHL arena as you can get, right? Or you've got out where you are, you know, UConn is playing in an old NHL spot.
They are building, UConn is building an on-campus arena, so we're looking very forward to what that's going to be. I think it'll be mid-sized. I think it'll be about 5,000-6,000. But I'll get into the New England side in a little bit.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You have like old ones, you have new ones. My absolute favorite, and it's actually my favorite hockey place of all time, is Yost.
And you're not alone in feeling that
Yost
way.
Yost Ice Arena. Oh my gosh, amazing! It's a Michigan, of course, and it used to be the basketball arena until, you know, they got big. And like everything else in Michigan, I mean, think about it. The hockey arena is named after a football coach. But yeah, just this old school building, tight. You know, the band stand is up on this almost balcony, and they're playing out like it's a theater show, you know, like way back where the trumpeters would come out on the balcony or whatever. I walked in and just kind of, wow, the ticket taker is, you know, I asked the ticket taker, how's it going? He's like, it's a great day because you're at Yost. And, you know, like those guys, I think the guys that work at Yost, you know, they like Michigan basketball and they like Michigan football and everything. But Michigan hockey is the be all and end all. Probably one that's just on the opposite spectrum. Funny enough, I would say their rivals is Notre Dame. Absolutely gorgeous, yeah, arena. Advertising? None. We don't need it. So yeah. Instead of all those gaudy ads on the boards, you have just like there's three colors at Notre Dame. There's blue and there's green and there's gold and there's nothing else. The only other color is white on the ice. Floors,
isn't that awesome? And that's
ceilings, everywhere.
Isn't that great? When you go to a college hockey rink, the boards are white. Ice is white. There's no. It's such a different world. It's such a great.
Not all of them, but the ones that can afford it. Oh yeah, absolutely. And Notre Dame's. Wow, is it 10 years old yet? I don't think it is.
Yeah, I think that Notre Dame might have been one of the first hockey arenas. I don't know. I want to say that might have been the first. No, it wasn't the first, but it was the first time that I said, "Wow, look at the band, look at the stands, look at the way this building is shaped." Because one part of it, the upper area, is for like club people, and they really kiss your butt in there, and they serve you food, and the place was packed. It was snowing that day. The arena itself is very nondescript. It sort of blends in with the other buildings. I think it's meant to be that way. But once you get inside, it's electric. And I think at one point that was number three. That made it our list, number three top stadium experiences for the year when we had the magazine. And people were telling me that work there. They're saying, yeah, we made number three. We were number three. So I had a wonderful time. You're absolutely right. You were just blown away by how awesome everything was. And you're right. It doesn't get the attention as football, not even basketball, but, you know, I would rank it up there as one of the must-see experiences of Notre Dame, probably right after football.
Yep. One of the cool things that I thought when I was there is the goaltender for Notre Dame, and this was only about 2 years ago, the goaltender for Notre Dame, his mom was Men on Rail.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, I guess we're that old now.
Yeah. Yeah, that old now. So yeah, another one that's talked about, I don't think any of us have actually been there, but the Engelstad Arena on the campus of Wrong MD. Is just known for just being a fantastic facility.
Yeah, it is. I have been there when we were driving from Minnesota to Winnipeg. We purposely went through Grand Forks and went and stopped at the arena because the store's in there. Unfortunately, practice was going on, so you couldn't really walk around. But it was amazing, absolutely amazing. And Ralph Engelstad, I mean, he saw what was coming, and he embedded the old Fighting Sioux logo in everything. And he really loved that logo, and he loved the name. And when they were having some political discussions about changing the name, Ralph Engelstad Arena had a lot to do with what was going on, because all of that stuff couldn't be covered up. It couldn't be removed. But just a beautiful, beautiful arena. There's nothing, even in the pros, there's nothing like Ralph Engelstad. There's nothing like the Compton Family Ice Arena, which is at Notre Dame. They are just, the attention to detail is just beyond. And they can do it without that commercialism that we see in the pros.
And other venues out in the Midwest, I think, are on that, a par, maybe not that level, but you think of, like you mentioned, the Kohl Center in Madison, Wisconsin. You talk about Mariucci Arena in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Some really fantastic venues. You know, I'm from the Northeast, so I haven't been, even though I've been to 26, that's how concentrated the schools are. There's 20 of them just in New England. 20 out of the 60 are located just in New England. So, but we don't have those big signature arenas. I'll get into what I like a little later, but I want to make sure that we highlight some of those fantastic places out in the Midwest.
Do you know what I think is really cool about college hockey that's a little bit different is you have a lot of spots, like you have RIT and you have
RIT Arena. We haven't talked about that. It's supposed to be beautiful.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of those newer kind of junior hockey arenas. It's nice. Maybe a little too clean, a little too nondescript. But you have them, you have Mercyhurst, you have a ton in Minnesota.
You can have American International and Bentley play on the same level as Notre Dame.
So you've got all these D2 schools, Alaska.
Yep.
You have all these D2 schools, which because Division II hockey disappeared eons ago, now they play at Division I. And maybe I don't have the right feeling for it, but it feels like a Division II school that plays Division I hockey, it feels like hockey is the top. It's the draw. Alabama Huntsville.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. How can they succeed? And the program is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question. There used to be two schools up in Alaska. There was the University of Alaska, and then there was Alaska Fairbanks. Fairbanks has discontinued the Division I program.
No.
No, Anchorage did?
Anchorage did.
All right, I always mix them up. Anchorage, so...
The Seawolves.
Will Fairbanks be able to continue up on that island?
They have... I actually looked this up the other day. So the Alaska Nanooks have a plan, and they have published that they are prepared to play. Now... With the basically what happened is the division the conference that had both the Alaska teams and Alabama Huntsville, basically all the other members left because they didn't want to go there anymore, and they recreated the CCHA. So you had Bowling Green and Miami and schools like that who are going to be in the new CCHA. Alabama Huntsville and Alaska are going to join, I believe, Arizona State, and they're all independents. So it's going to be tough for them, I think, to go without a partner, but they're going to give it a shot. And I mean, it's easy to say they're now the only game in town, but truth be told, and most people probably don't know this, Anchorage and Fairbanks are not remotely close.
No.
They're very far apart. They're basically a day's drive from one to the other. So I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we'll venture out into my part of the country here in the Northeast. You can separate college hockey into three conferences in the Northeast. You can almost stratify them. You've got the Hockey East, which are the big name hockey schools, by and large. You've got the ECAC, which consists of the old Ivy League schools and a few others. And then you've got the poor Atlantic Hockey Association, which when I started really following college hockey, a lot of these schools, actually, they're made up, like you said, David, the Division II schools, where hockey is their only Division I team. And a lot of these places they didn't even have campus arenas. They played in community rinks. So, for example, Bentley played at the John Ryan Arena in Watertown. Sacred Heart played at the Milford Ice Palace. American International played at the Olympia Ice Arena. So they weren't even mentioned. You could go to a Bentley game, and there would be no sign that it was Bentley. You would see youth banners hanging, not a Division I college thing. So that has changed over the last few years. The AHA has really made strides. Schools have invested and built nice places. We talked about RIT very brief for a second, built a beautiful on-campus arena. Bentley just built a nice 2,000-seat hockey arena, which is really nice. I was able to go there for opening weekend. You've got new arenas getting built. Sacred Heart is building a new on-campus arena. But in the meantime, they've kind of moved into minor league places. So AIC plays at the MassMutual Center. Sacred Heart plays at the Webster Bank Arena in Bridgeport. So they've moved up. The whole bottom rung has moved up. And so now there are a more equal playing field for prospects and for recruits and stuff.
Here's another one from that division that'll just kind of make your head spin. So Canisius now plays in the Harbor Center, which is nice. It's right across from Key Bank, where the Buffalo Sabres play, and it's a nice spot. But before that, they played at Buffalo State. So the Division I team, Canisius, played at Division III Buffalo State. There were no Canisius banners anywhere in that place.
Yeah, so it shows how the sport is growing and actually leveling out. So instead of having the haves and have-nots, and we're talking about a tiny school being able to play on a par with Michigan, it's starting to not be so stratified. So if I want to talk about some of my favorite places, I really have to separate the 26 different places I've been to into new places and classic barns. So you've got some of my favorite places are like Aganis Arena at Boston University. You've got Songus Arena on UMass Lowell, which used to be a minor league hockey arena, but it was always owned by the school. And when the Lowell Devils moved out, the school just said, we're fine with that. It's ours.
Yeah.
Really nice place to catch a game. The Mullen Center on the campus of UMass Amherst is a great place to catch a game. But when I think of my favorite college hockey barns, I think of some of the old places, like I mentioned Northeastern, Matthews Arena on the campus of Northeastern, which is actually the oldest arena still in full-time use in the world and still a very viable place. Actually, a little trivia for our listeners, Matthews Arena is the only place that has been the first home of two NHL teams. Can you name them? Two NHL teams got their start at Matthews Arena.
The New England Whalers and Boston Bruins.
There you go. So the Hurricanes and the Bruins both started at Matthews Arena.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, their first year, right? They played and then they left.
That's how old Matthews Arena is.
But get rid of it. We need a new one.
Nobody's talking about getting rid of Matthews Arena.
No, I know that.
Although they did put in a new gigantic, and I mean gigantic, scoreboard. Dave, you've been there.
Yeah, I've been there for basketball.
You've got this 120-year-old arena with this brand-new 70-foot-long mega scoreboard. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't fit. It's like the Jerry Jones kind of scoreboard in there, isn't it? I mean, obviously not as big as that, but it just has that feel. I think it's as big as the basketball court.
I think it does go from baseline to baseline, or almost, yeah. I think of another old barn where I just loved the vibe. If you go to a game in Northeastern, the band, the student section, bar none. I haven't even talked about the bean pot yet. We'll get to that. Princeton, Hobey Baker Rink. Mark, you've been there. You can testify to this. This old brick building. You don't even know you're at the hockey. I was actually standing right next to it.
Yeah.
Looking around. Where's the hockey rink? I can't find it. There it is right there.
You can't find it. It's so small and narrow. You're like, man, how do they play hockey here? But they managed to do it. It does feel like you step back in time several decades when you're at Hobey Baker.
It feels unchanged from, say, the 40s even.
And I would say Parkin's a little, I don't know, Parkin, it's just in a weird location. It doesn't stand out, unlike the baseball field or the football stadium or the basketball arena. I think that's what just kind of adds to the mystique of this facility. Plus, it bears the name of Hobey Baker. And, you know, a lot of history at Princeton with its hockey program. So,
both outstanding player awards are named after Princeton players. The Patty Katzmeyer for the ladies and the Hobey Baker for the gentlemen. Both Princeton alums. And when I also think of my favorite places to check out, I think of Ingalls Rink in New Haven, home of the Yale Bulldogs. It's better known as the Yale Whale.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being, it was designed to look, well, it looks like a whale. It's got this giant, it was built to look like a skate and portray motion. So it's got this giant undulating beam running down the center of it. And it's got planks. So the ceiling is kind of a saddle shape. It does look like you're in the belly of a whale when you're inside of it. Small rink, nothing spectacular about the rink itself or the seating itself, but the visuals and the history. It was built in the 50s and just has that vibe to it. So those are my favorite places to go in college hockey. Dave, have you talked about your favorites besides Michigan?
Other than Michigan and Notre Dame? and, you know, those are probably the big ones. I got to be honest, I've enjoyed pretty much every place I've gone. One place, and I think you could testify to this, I really enjoyed it. I was a little disappointed, and that was Boston College. I loved the building. I loved seeing, I mean, oh my gosh, they're going to have to, like, invest in more ceiling space. There's so many banners around that place. I love the Hall of Fame. It had a really nice sort of feel to it. Maybe it was the day that I went and the team that they played. It felt a little flat. It was not the experience that I expected. Maybe it was because they were playing Merrimack. But, you know, also they were who was the guy whose jersey they retired that day?
Yeah, Brian Gianta.
Brian Gianta, yes, thank you. I give you a bobblehead.
Oh, no big deal. Brian Gianta.
But I thought, you know, this would be, like, big but it was flat. Maybe because they weren't playing a Boston team, but I don't know. But I really liked the building.
Yeah, Conti Farms got that 80s vibe. It was built in the 80s and really looks like it. But, it's a neat place. If you're into Boston College, even if you're not, it really they display their history very well in that place.
Miami was probably the other one. And, Mark, we were there at the same time, and it was I think we were both really surprised by how great it was, and to think it's in like west central Ohio.
Yeah, it's like first of all, Oxford, Ohio, where Miami is this beautiful oasis. Once you cross the border from Indiana into Ohio, Oxford is right there, and you're like, wow, where am I? Because there's not another city quite like that anywhere, in the area. I live about 2 miles. You can't take the interstate there. You have to sort of get off the interstate and take some state roads. But, yeah, you have this gorgeous hockey arena that is designed specifically for the sport, for the team, which I think is the number one draw there, ahead of football and basketball. And you just had this packed house with all the fixings of the band and the student section and the people chanting during certain parts of the games, which are the traditions. And everybody's a red-blooded hockey fan. It was simply amazing to think that this exists in an area where you're not really known for hockey, support, and, yeah. And I would tell anybody, I'd put Oxford up with a lot of great other college hockey venues. It's a must see.
Sneaky small.
Yeah.
It feels right. A lot bigger than it really is. You look at the capacity of that place and you go, whoa, I could have swore it was like 10,000.
Yeah. And the way it's designed, it's got the brick interior. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the campus, all the buildings sort of match each other.
Yeah.
If there's a baseball game this weekend, I may head over there because that's just such a cool little town to hang out in. I would love to spend more time there.
Another one I would say, Paul, back to you, that I liked. I was pleasantly surprised. The vibe just didn't do it. Harvard. Like I thought the arena itself was really nice, and there's a lot going on. The murals, the trophies, when you got pictures on the wall from like the 1800s, that's really cool. But yeah, it was flat. It could be because when I was there, it was minus a million degrees Fahrenheit, so it was a little cold. But that's another thing that you're gonna get in college hockey that you're not gonna get in basketball and you're not gonna get in football. Harvard has won a national championship in the not that far past. So is Yale, yep. Right? Like, those are not schools that are competing at that level in basketball or in football, right?
Right. Union College has won a championship in the last decade. Union College. You want to talk about an intimate little cozy place? Union, where they jam 4,000 people into a spot no bigger than my garage. It's amazing. And the upper level consists of these bleachers. And I swear the first set of bleachers, the first row, had to be 3 feet off the ground. I remember having to help pull people up into the bleachers. It was just a really strange setup. But because they have to jam people into every little crevice of the place.
UMass Dartmouth, you're on notice. Paul's Garage.
Yes.
Hockey team.
I was going to say, if anybody's thinking that during COVID protocols, his garage is available.
UMass Dartmouth does have a hockey team, by the way. We're Division III. Okay. Yeah, we were talking about our favorite places, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention really quickly, the best college hockey experience ever anywhere, bar none, at any time, and that is the Bean Pot. Mm. And we've talked about the Bean Pot on this show before, so I won't get into it too far, but we were talking about what the energy that student sections bring and the energy that bands bring to the experience. Now you got the Bean Pot, which takes place, the four Boston Division I teams, Boston College, Boston University, Northeastern, and Harvard, they play on the first two Mondays of every February. And you have four student sections, you have four bands, you have alumni and fans of the four teams all mixed together at the TD Garden. So you have crowds anywhere between 10 and 16,000 for the Bean Pot. It just makes for a great, great atmosphere, especially if you take the best two student sections, BU and Northeastern, and when they're meeting in the final, like they did last year for an overtime game, the back and forth. I wanted to be sitting in the aisle right between the two sections just to be in the middle of that ruckus. It must have been the loudest place on the earth at that time. So I also want to mention a really bad college hockey experience I had in a place that should be on our list of top arenas. But because my experience there was so bad, it went the other way. I'm talking about Pegula Arena, Penn State. Now, I don't know. You guys have not been there, have you?
No.
Brand new, shiny arena, less than 10 years old. It actually has some great modern features, like you can check out the players, the teams on the players, with touch screens, and they incorporate technology. And it's got its own little Subway restaurant in there, and it's got different things. Really nice place. It's got some nice luxury boxes and group areas. But the reason my experience there was so bad is that we visited Penn State on one of our big hockey road trips. So it lined up where we happened to be there when Notre Dame was in town. So as you may imagine, sellout crowd. So we were not able to get tickets. We were able to manage standing room tickets. Now, the issue is the way Penn State is set up. There are standing room only in three of the corners of the rink. So there's room for maybe 50 people, standing room. I think for this game, they sold at least five times that. So people were 5-10 deep in the corners trying to see the rink. We didn't get to see any of the game. So it turned what otherwise would have been a fantastic night. The place was rocking, as you might imagine, but we didn't get to see much. We actually found a little lounge that had a fireplace and some couches, and we watched the game on TV that we were at.
That story reminds me of the College World Series, just 5-10 rows deep in the outfield area.
Yeah. So a lesson to teams, don't be greedy. If you don't have room, don't sell the tickets, please.
You know, or call the fire department when you do that.
You know, as much as I've enjoyed college hockey, I would be remiss if I hadn't said that both times I've been to the Frozen Four, I've been a little lackluster. The first time I went was in Detroit in 2010. Boston College won that year. But they were trying to get, like, the biggest crowd ever, and they had it in Ford Field. And
wow.
This was before they had the Final Four there, maybe a year or two before. And what they tried to do is they were trying to do the center kind of, you know, Winter Classic kind of style where the ice is right in the middle. And it didn't sell to that. So then they ended up pushing it down to one end. So it was really oversized. and your tickets, you're in the lottery. I mean, that's often the way the NCAA works. So, you know, we were up in the upper deck and not a great view. And then the second time I went was in Buffalo, and between the NCAA and the organizers, they really, really missed.
That was a bad one, yeah.
They missed their price point. It was way off, and it wasn't packed.
Does the NCAA organizational wise do anything not haphazardly or cluster effery?
I would say this. The NCAA is responsible for far more than hockey, football, and basketball.
Oh yeah, sure. Doesn't answer that.
So yeah, Dave, your experience kind of goes against mine. Where I've been to a couple of Frozen Fours, but they were quite a while ago, and the Frozen Four I think is kind of outgrown where its sweet spot was. Because when I saw the Frozen Four, it was in Providence.
Oof.
And if you no, it was wonderful. One of the Ooh. Best nights of my life. One of the most good nights of my life.
Oh, but that's where I want to be to see college hockey, Providence.
I'll take it.
It was fantastic.
And yeah, I don't think that'd be a bad spot.
But if you look back at where the Frozen Four used to be, it used to be in the smaller places.
Yeah.
And now it's in the NHL rinks or bigger.
I can't wait to go to Providence, the smaller arena, with a bunch of college kids pissing me off every period.
Which would be pretty easy to do, correct?
Can't wait. I always seem to sit next to the or in front of or behind the guy who is trying to impress his girlfriend and talking about the game in front of him in which he knows nothing about. And it's not just me saying that. Ask Kelly. Every time both of us turn around and go, that's not at all what's going on right there. We won't say it, but in our heads, like, what? And I'm just
I just sit cam on him when somebody's
multiply that by 80 college. Yeah.
I'm sure nobody will throw, like, rock hard Fig Newtons at you like they do in Philadelphia. Oh,
please.
If you're wearing an opposing jersey.
Am I throwing Fig Newtons in Philadelphia? Because I just ate a bag and I need more.
My very first college hockey games were actually the CCHA finals, like the old CCHA, which were played at Joe Louis Arena.
Wow.
The final, Michigan and Notre Dame.
Oh, God. Yeah, sign me up for that.
It was great. It was great. I even got to see Alaska. Alaska played in the bronze medal game before. Alaska and Northern Michigan.
Listen, maybe I just creeped out because I watched that North Dakota.
Oh, yeah. I fell asleep, but
Oh my God, Minnesota Duluth.
Minnesota Duluth.
Yeah, I just watched that game. It was in, I believe it was it in North? Where was it?
North Dakota.
It was in North Dakota. Okay, I was about to say, I'm like, am I wrong? No, but I was watching everybody there, I was just creeped out because no, I'm not correct. that's not true at all. But I was watching this crowd during a pandemic where no masks act like that. And I'm just like, oh, I can't wait to go to a college hockey game. I'm so happy. Oh, man. I don't know. It just seems like we're having to. By the way, frozen Fig Newtons, is that what's going on? Because I missed that game. I thought it was
hard.
I thought it was batteries and snowballs. That's what the people keep telling me.
Well, this was at the Spectrum. So, or the
they
FU
had Fig Newtons at the Spectrum? That's
at the FU. No, they were brought in as ammo. It was
not as a snack.
During the Spectrum or the FU Center?
Well, I'm trying to think.
There's a difference. One smells like piss, the other doesn't yet.
It might have been the Spectrum. This was early on. It was a New York Saints versus Philadelphia Wings game.
Oh, okay, that's it. Well, never mind.
Coming back to college hockey.
Are we? I think I think we're done with college hockey. I think that kind of signals.
Let's talk about Fig Newtons. Do you eat them with a side of pork roll? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Fig Newtons were invented in Massachusetts.
They're fucking delicious, by the way.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, they're tasty. They're tasty.
Why? Okay, college hockey. You want me to show up? I'm going to bring it back around. I need Fig Newtons served at the bars at the concession stands at the NCAA game.
So let's wrap up our show by talking about we've been the past couple of weeks. Because, Mark, you got some good stories. You've been to a game or two.
Yeah, I've been to the Final Four tournaments being held here in Indianapolis. So someone actually had an extra ticket for me, and I got to check out Baylor versus Hartford, which was held at an NFL stadium, Lucas Oil Stadium.
Is that where that was?
I wanted to go there because I wanted to see the two courts, and you're able to walk in and you can see both courts. Obviously, one is not being used, and then they rope you off. So about 35,000 seats, I think, for both ends. Very nondescript atmosphere. I was sitting on top. You barely could see the game. We were talking about watching basketball from in a football stadium, and all I could think about was what we were saying, like, wow, you're so disconnected from the game. There's not a lot of fans. It was at 25%, so you didn't even have, 20,000 people there. When I walked downstairs, I sat by the Baylor people. They were there cheering. It got a little more exciting. I went by the Hartford folks. There were some Hartford people. And I got a little bit of enjoyment talking with them because they were just happy to be there. It was their first time in the big the tournament. I thought the best part was being outside downtown with all the fans walking around and at the restaurants and talking to them and just having some really great conversations. A lot of the bars were packed. There was no social distancing going on, but you did have to have a table seat. You couldn't just stand around. So that was Friday. The next day I was at Butler University and Hinkle. They had a series of games as well. They had Georgetown versus Colorado, and then you had Iona versus Alabama. Got to talk to a lot of Alabama fans. Got to talk to a lot of Georgetown fans. I saw Patrick Ewing. I saw Dikembe Mutombo. Once again, the excitement was outside of the arena because once you got inside, you're very nondescript and you're at a 9,000-seat venue. I thought it was going to be a little bit better, but you're just there with very limited capacity, and that was the hot ticket to get. Everybody who was buying a ticket wanted to check out a game at Butler, but I tell people, go to Butler when the place is packed. You'll like it even more. But, you know, the way I look at it, beggars can't be choosers. If you get a chance to see a game at Butler, you'll take it, whether there's 9,000 people or 90 people. So then at Monday I went downtown again. I went to check out a game at the Bankers Life Fieldhouse, UCLA versus Christian Abilene. Once again, just very nondescript. I was very disappointed. I was getting a little bit tired of going to these NCAA games because there wasn't much going on. It's like, okay, by Monday, the thrill was gone. Now, I think it's picking up again with the Elite Eight action happening as we speak. But the highlight for me was Saturday. I went to Huntington University, which is a very small Christian college. I don't know if it's a Christian. Yeah, it's a Christian college. Division III NAIA, about a half hour south of Fort Wayne. Small little town. But they got this gorgeous ballpark called Florist Glen Park. It is built down a hill. So when you park your car on top, you can actually see the diamond. And people are camped out on chairs or blankets, and they're bringing food to eat and their dogs. And you have like a line of people watching the game from the hill. And this hill right now is full of leafless trees. People tell me once you come back during the spring, all the greenery shows up and it makes it even more beautiful. So if you walk down the hill, you get to see a small little creek that runs around the back of the grandstand, and there's actually a bridge, a little bridge you can walk over and retrieve foul balls. And you can actually try to walk up the hill. But it was a beautiful day. It was 60-some degrees. The place was not at capacity, but close to near capacity. And it was great baseball. It was a 4-3 extra inning game, so the pitching was great. The defense was better. And everybody just had a really great time. And I was not expecting much. Somebody told me to go up there because they thought it was a nice ballpark. When you compare this college with other teams in this conference, this one stands out. And I would tell people, go out to this ballpark if you happen to be in the Fort Wayne area or if you're visiting ballparks in Indianapolis or the surroundings, make a trip to Huntington, Indiana. Very small place, beautiful ballpark, one of the best kept secrets, I think, for ballpark travelers. I would tell people this is a place you need to go. And then afterwards, go downtown to a place called Antiqueology. They make homemade ice cream, homemade root beer, homemade soda, homemade milkshakes. Get the Rice Krispie Treat milkshake. Wonderful ice cream. You'll love it. And there's a few other great places in town to eat at, and you can check that out in my review coming soon. But what a marvelous, perfect day I had on Saturday looking at this ballpark that I was unaware of. Forest Glen Park, Huntington Foresters, nothing you've ever seen before. Check it out.
Isn't that what we all go for while we're searching for places, are these hidden gems?
Yeah.
We feel like we've been the one to discover it, yeah.
Yeah, and it was, you know, if I went there with, like, the day before the game was rained out, if I went there on Sunday when the temperatures were 40 degrees, I would have said, wow, this place stinks. But you go there on the right day. And right now, in where I live in Indianapolis, you have to look at the weather because one day can be gorgeous and the next day can be completely opposite. And that what makes it tough checking out college ballparks around this time because you want to go there on the perfect day. You know, I was going to go to Cincinnati tonight to see a ball game. That would have been nice weather. If I go there Thursday, it's good temperatures are going to be in the upper 30s, lower 40s. So, you know, it's just you really like those travels when you go to a place and you fall in love and you can't stop thinking about it. And I even took the state roads back home. It's about an hour and 20 minute drive for me. Even that was wonderful. You know, it's daylight longer. You take the trip back home. You're on the state roads, your office, the interstates. Everything about that day was just really nice. Met some great people up there too, promoted the site. So yeah, just those are the days you live for. That's why I love traveling. That's why I love doing these ballpark hunting and writing for Stadium Journey, because I get to go to cool places like that and tell people about it.
Perfect. Jeez, speaking of
a distillery up there. Okay.
Speaking of days you live for, I guess I had a couple of those this weekend too.
Paul, you didn't do anything this weekend. What are you talking about?
Nah, no big deal. Who cares?
Yeah, I got to, for the first time, what was it? Like I said, the first time I had been inside a hockey rink for 383 days. I actually checked it out. And the reason I was in a hockey rink is because I was actually part of the crew working the National Women's Hockey League Isabel Cup Championships this past weekend, Friday and Saturday. So we did two games on Friday and then the championship game on Saturday. So it was actually a thrill of a lifetime to be part of the crew working the game and to be part of the first telecast of professional women's hockey on network TV. The games were all televised live on NBC Sports Network, and I was the PA announcer for the games. So if you happen to watch the games, you definitely heard me talking about them. So that was my weekend. It was a great thrill to be part of that. I mean, I'm not going to talk about Warrior Ice Arena. There were no fans, but still didn't diminish the...
It's a shame your team didn't win or anything.
Yeah, the Boston Pride did take home the Isabel Cup. They are now the first two-time winner of the Isabel Cup. And it was actually, you know, as somebody who does podcasts and has worked doing PA and stuff, it was really interesting to be part of a national telecast like that and to see
how it actually works versus this crap.
Yeah, to see a different world. You know, I had a producer in my ear giving me cues when to go. Oh, and there you go. A funny story from the telecast.
I mean, right? I could be in your ear giving you stuff to say if you want. I could give you the experience.
I've had it. I don't need it. My producer, who was actually a Shelley Picard, who was the deputy commissioner of the NWHL.
Oh, okay, cool.
She was acting as the liaison between the production truck and everybody inside the arena.
That's cool.
So she was giving me my cues of when to start. And, you know, so for the first semifinal game was Boston and Toronto. And Boston was the visiting team, technically. So I had introduced them first. So, you know, my spiel is, welcome to Warrior Ice Arena and the Isabel Cup playoffs. Now let's meet the starting lineups. First for the Boston Pride. And so I went into my spiel and introduced the first player. It was number 21, Christina Putinia. And after I got through her name, said, no, stop, wait, they're not ready yet. So they were doing whatever it is they were doing. So, okay, so stop. And nobody else inside the arena, I think, besides Shelley and myself and the lady who was in there with us doing the clock, nobody else knew what was going on. So a couple seconds later, she says, okay, go. So I start through the whole spiel again. Number 21, Christina Putinia, says, no, stop. So apparently in her ear from the truck, the guy was telling, the director was telling her, no. And she thought he was saying, go.
Hmm.
So.
Well, I'll tell you this, on TV, I only saw it once.
Right. Yeah, because on TV, the reason they didn't want me to go is because they didn't want
TV wasn't
live.
Right, it wasn't mic'd up. Yeah, yeah.
Right. They didn't want to cut to me, and I'm already halfway through the introductions.
It was just so funny because when you zoomed in on the players, they're laughing.
They stopped me twice, and so finally says, okay, now go. And so I do it again, and they cut to the players, and the players are on the ice cracking up as I'm doing their introductions. So
that's not your fault, though.
No, it was definitely not my fault, but it was really funny that I false started three times. And you can see, if you watch it knowing that story now, you can see it. Oh, yeah, they're all laughing. They're laughing at me.
No, I saw it. I didn't know what they were laughing at until I texted you, and you texted me.
Yeah, you're
texting
me during the game. I said, oh, I got a funny story for this.
I did it three times. I was like, that explains why I saw them going.
And they obviously didn't know what was going on. I mean, they're like, what the hell? Why are you doing this three times? But it was a thrill of a lifetime to be part of that and to come home and to watch the game and to hear the announcers kick it down to me, mention my name, and me do my spiel. And it went off well, and the tournament went well, and hopefully we can do it again next year on national TV with fans.
I did say this to add on to your this is just an assumption based on how things are going. I do think sports, whether or not it's 100% capacity, it won't be. I do think all the sports are going to be as close to their normal schedule as possible. I have this feeling.
Let's hope you're right.
It's just, you know, just wear a mask still and calm down. Your fake oppression about your mask. I'm not going to get into it now, but stop it. Damn it.
So Dave, can you top the NCAA tournament or broadcasting on national TV?
No.
Yeah. I hurt my arm.
I went and picked up dinner at the Iron Skillet in Wasaga Beach. That's pretty exciting.
It is. That is. Sounds good. Was it good?
It was fantastic. It's always good there.
Was it national TV good?
Yeah, I didn't want national TV in my cottage while I was eating.
So,
what
yeah.
What are you guys doing here?
So the Boston Pride ended up winning the tournament, and to be part of the celebration, everything was just an amazing thrill.
And next year will be seven teams.
Yes, yes. Another new team joining the circuit next year.
Was that Toronto? Is that
Toronto's
already there.
Montreal is joining next year.
Oh, do we know the name?
It's not official yet, but
Montreal Nordiques.
Cool. Well, that would be interesting. You want to see this league grow and hopefully.
I do.
Legitimate. Yeah.
Just Dave saying interesting makes me like, all right, now I need this to happen. Because that.
Make it so.
That's a whole episode right there. They named it the Nordiques. They certainly did.
I was unaware I held such cachet to make it.
Hey, Canadian.
All I had to say was interesting, and all of a sudden, boom.
No, it's the way you said interesting.
Montreal Nordiques.
Quebec City Nordiques.
The chances of the new women's team being called the Montreal Nordiques are in the negatives.
In the negative.
Yeah. It's not even zero chance.
No. They're in the double negatives.
Double negative, however, and a positive.
However, how about the Maroons?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Ooh. Oh, I got one. The Expos.
Not happening.
Damn it.
The Expos, I like it, but I don't know if it would.
No, it doesn't fit at all.
Doesn't sound hockey-ish.
The UPs. Take UP back.
I would think that Warren Cromartie and his potential ownership group with Stephen Bronfman have a very secure hold over the Expos name.
Do you really think that's coming back?
Yeah, I would assume.
Really?
Wow. They're definitely not coming back as a hockey team.
No, of course not. By the way, for all the Stadium Journey listeners, that was sarcasm. I don't think that at all.
All right, so I guess that's where we're going to wrap it up for tonight. I hope you enjoyed our discussion of college hockey. And, some big-time traveling this week for people who can't travel very far, huh?
Are you bitching about this pandemic anymore? Y'all went out, except for Dave.
Well, okay? I
went to an empty arena.
It's nice when the 64, team tournament is held in your home, yes. The place you live. It makes life a little bit easier. Yes. But I'm still planning some trips. It's just weather-wise, do I want to go out and see Ohio State Buckeyes baseball on Friday?
See, that's what's different, Mark, because none of the colleges in my area are allowing fans. I've checked every single one of them.
Yeah.
Do you know who I am? I'm the CA guy for the NWA. You know, son
Boston
of a bitch.
Here's the thing. I have a ring.
I'm assuming a lot of these colleges are allowing fans. If Huntington University is allowing fans, I would assume IU, Purdue, Ohio State, Miami University are allowing fans. But, I should check into that. I mean, Cincinnati had a game. I did contact their PR guy. He didn't write back to me, but that's – I don't want to make the drive because I could say, well, I'll just go pay the $5 to watch the game. But I know when I was looking at football games, Miami University told me they weren't very limited on who they were taking. So that could be the same for baseball. So, yeah, it probably does depend on the college. So
you guys crack me up. Our colleges aren't doing anything. most of the students aren't even at college.
They're still doing remote.
Yes,
in a lot of cases they are.
Dave, the United States are run by a bunch of morons.
getting shots. Gas prices are going up. We're ready.
Just saying.
So Dan, where can our listeners direct all their hate mail?
Hate mail to that brick wall. The closest brick wall to that name, they can send the hate mail to that brick wall. No, follow me at DanLaw83.
And Mark, where can our listeners follow your travels?
You can check me out at Ballpark Hunter on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Check out my review on Forest Glen Park this Monday at 12 o'clock Eastern Time. That's when I'll be releasing the video. One of the best ballparks you've never heard of.
And Dave, where can our listeners follow you online?
ProFan9 on Twitter. Obstructive Views on its way real soon. Check out the last one on UConn basketball. The next one is getting ready for that opening day, PNC Park in Pittsburgh. Get ready for it. Check it out. Literary Journey, I haven't mentioned lately, but it's still continuing. I highly recommend Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. Fascinating, fascinating story about how he built Nike.
That does sound like an interesting read.
And shops.
And you can follow, yeah, you can follow my Stadium Journeys on Twitter or Instagram. That's PuckmanRI. And don't forget, please check out our website, stadiumjourney.com. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram. We're at Stadium Journey. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Like us on Facebook as well. We got a page over there too. We're on all our social medias. And you can find the Stadium Journey podcast at vocnation.com or search VOC Nation Radio Network on whatever podcast app you have. Remember, all of the VOC Nation podcasts are on Spotify. Look at that. We're big time. And we simulcast live every other Tuesday night. Don't want to leave that out. At 8 Eastern at twitch.tv/danlaw83. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. That'll put us into April. It'll be April 13th, I believe, in 2 weeks. We have not decided on a topic yet, but I can guarantee you it'll be awesome. Until then, remember, the albatross and the whale, they are my brothers. Cross the desert, bear man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere.
This is the Swister, the Doctor of Style, and you're listening to VOC Nation.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Tazzy Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Taku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And then
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into like snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Wrestling with History, the voice of choice, and Killer Ken Resnick.
When I die, they're going to open me up and find about 2,000 undigested Northwest Airline cheese omelets.
Mr. Chris Cruz, what's going on?
Jesus, how did I get roped into this?
General Adnan went to school with Saddam Hussein.
He cried, I cried, he cried, and who could find?
Adnan lost a lot of family in the Iraqi war.
Everybody loves Granny.
Wow. Yeah, see, a lot of people don't know that.
Yes, Taylor, you guys are busting me up.
Catch Wrestling with History with Ken Resnick and I live on VOCNation.com Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern Time, or listen to the podcast by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app.
Stadium Journey, the worldwide leader in stadium reviews for the traveling sports fan, is proud to present the Stadium Journey podcast on VOC Nation. Join us as we talk with prominent figures from around the sports world to discuss issues pertaining to sports travel and stadiums around the globe. New episodes air on VOC Nation Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Join Paul Baker, Dave Cartney, Mark Viquez, Dan Calchico, and guests from throughout the sports world on the Stadium Journey podcast on VOC Nation.
On Wrestling with Problems, we deal with two things, wrestling and problems. On the wrestling side, we cover the major feds as well as the indies. As far as problems go, we cover our problems, American problems, and world problems. Sometimes the problems are even related to wrestling. Every week, comedian King David Lane and wrestler, promoter Chris Best discuss the best and especially the worst in the world of wrestling with a heaping dose of comedy. Check us out live on VOCNation.com or on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out. VOCNation.com. WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Yo, this is Jerry Stein of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobs here. You get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby, because it's about to get nasty all around and up in this mother. Get ready. Nasty Sensation is coming at you.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.